Hi, and welcome to Sybil's Book Club on BlackAmericaWeb.com. I'm Sybil Wilkes, and it gives me great pleasure to have a conversation with the wonderful journalist from ABC. She is the anchor of 2020, and her name is Elizabeth Vargas, and she has written an incredible book, Between Breaths, a memoir of panic and addiction. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
It is so good to talk to you. I've been a fan for so very long and have followed your career for a long time, and just really a remarkable retelling of your story. And I got to tell you, it takes great courage to tell your story, first of all, but to really reveal and to open yourself up to all of this. It is it's just a master undertaking. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. It wasn't easy, but I've been incredibly gratified and overwhelmed by the reaction, so it's made it all worth it.
Now, you talk about this memoir of panic and addiction. When did you first recognize that you suffered from anxiety and had these panic attacks, I guess, as it were?
Oh, my gosh, my earliest memories as a little girl are infused with anxiety, but I started having, you know, all-out daily, you know, panic attacks that were so, you know, huge that nobody could possibly have overlooked them.
Mm-hmm.
When I was 6 years old, the year my dad was sent to Vietnam, we were living in Japan on an army base there, and I started having panic attacks every day, and it was terrible. But nobody at that point, we were in the middle of a terrible war, and we weren't doing much to help the Vietnam vets with PTSD and other issues, and nobody was certainly doing anything or paying much attention to the children or the spouses of those vets who were also suffering, I think.
And certainly post-traumatic stress, we do think of the veterans, but we don't think of their families and all that.
No.
You all did.
No, it's true. I think now we're a little bit better at it.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting to, I know that several, in fact, I've done stories on it, the military is addressing on many of these big army bases, especially during the Iraq War, you know, all the children who will go a year or two without seeing a parent and worry about that parent being safe. And I think we're now doing more to address the issue of anxiety and PTSD among family members, but a lot more, I believe, needs to be done.
You talk about in the book, Between Breaths, a memoir of panic and addiction, you talk about your stints, I guess, your visits to rehab and going through the times in which you did it. And I remember there was one section where they talked about being a problem drinker, an alcohol abuser, and being an addict of alcohol. Did you recognize your steps as you were going through this?
No, I was deep in denial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and part of it was that I was so high functioning. You know, I still had this job. I was able to keep it all together through this job, to perform at a high level, to not drink when I needed to work. And it was very slow and creeping on me. I mean, there are other alcoholics who I've heard speak about their disease, and we'll talk about the first time they drank, they blacked out, and, you know, there were immediate consequences, and then they went back for more. For me, it was a very, very long and slow ramp up and creep, and I didn't recognize it, and I was in complete denial about it. I just, you know, I could not believe that this could possibly be true about me. I kept trying to figure out a way, like, no, I'm a problem drinker.
Mm-hmm.
I'm unhappy, and I'm stressed out, and I'm anxious, so I'm drinking, I'm self-medicating, but I can stop. And at some point, obviously, I couldn't, and I didn't recognize, and I'm still not even sure when the switch flipped, but it did, and I needed to stop trying to dissect that and intellectualize, you know,
mm-hmm.
figure, okay, when did I turn from a regular drinker to an alcoholic? It doesn't matter when it happened. It happened.
Yeah.
And I need to deal with that.
I'm very shy. And working in radio and doing the kind of things that we do, people don't recognize that because the personality on the radio is different from when you're off the mic and that kind of thing.
Right.
So I get, you know, about your panic attacks. I don't have them full blown, but I do understand. Do people, as a rule, have that kind of understanding who may not suffer from anxiety but still have some sort of understanding of what you go through?
I don't think, listen, it's very difficult to describe a panic attack to somebody who's never suffered one. It's very hard. And I think that if you don't suffer from addiction, I mean, from anxiety, you don't, well, either one, actually, you can't understand what it feels like to be caught in that. I tried my best in my book to describe it, but I'm sure, and I know it's resonated with some people because I've been overwhelmed by the number of people who've reached out after reading the book. We know that 40 million Americans are anxious in this country, and 30 million Americans are alcoholic. And there's a huge, huge link between women and anxiety and addiction. Like 60% of women who are alcoholics are also anxious. It's only 35% for men. So for women, it's a big issue. The biggest thing I would say is that, listen, I mean, you know, there isn't a typical, people think, oh, if you're an alcoholic, you must be the guy living under the bridge who, you know, doesn't have a job, who's wearing the raincoat and looks terrible, and he always has a bottle and a brown paper bag. And that is just not true. That's not how most alcoholics look. In fact, the vast majority of alcoholics look just like you and me. And, you know, and for people who are trying to quit and feel discouraged, or more importantly, the people around them who judge them harshly or abandon them because they didn't stay quit the first time they tried to quit, you know, it's important to understand that most people, it takes 3 to 7 attempts to stop drinking before it finally sticks. If stopping drinking was so easy, you could get it on the first try. Nobody would have a problem, right? So, you know, I would just tell people to be a little bit kinder to themselves and to those around them who are in that struggle, and not to abandon them so quickly because they maybe tried and failed and relapsed once or twice. Relapse is a part of recovery, and the biggest thing is not, you know, that you relapsed, it's that you're willing to get back up and try and get back on the horse again.
This book touched me in so many ways, and especially your relationship with your children. And now that you have reached this point and you've revealed so much about your life and telling the public about it, what kind of conversations do you have with your children about this?
Oh, not a lot right now, because for my kids, it's ancient history.
Gotcha.
You know,
gotcha.
For children, it's like, what? Oh, yeah. But listen, the biggest thing is it's not just one conversation you have with them. It's many. And I just last week I was telling my 13-year-old son that, you know, you never, ever want to drink or do drugs, God forbid, which I didn't say that to him, but I'm saying that, you know, in general.
Sure.
To hide a feel, to not feel a feeling. You know what I mean? People drink because they like the way it makes them feel. That's why people drink. They're not out in the bars having wine and beer and martinis and cosmopolitans because they like the way it tastes so much. They like the way it makes them feel, and that's okay. What's not okay and what's a danger sign is if you're drinking to not feel something. To numb something. And that's, you know, as I look back, that's what I was doing for a long time. I was drinking because I didn't want to feel anxious, because I didn't want to feel insecure, because I didn't want to feel nervous at that cocktail party or worried or stressed. And that was the only way I could think of to relax myself. And, you know, looking back, I should have been dealing with my anxiety in different ways, you know, healthier ways, even though I was also going to the gym to work out to relieve stress. And I was doing all the other things that you were trying to do to deal with things. But my anxiety was always, it was just about numbing it. And for me, I found the best way to numb it was to have wine. And obviously, it backfired on me.
So in the book, Between Breaths, A Memoir of Panic and Addiction by Elizabeth Vargas, Elizabeth, you talk so openly about all of these things. Was this a cathartic effort? Was it a release of sorts for you in writing the book, or was it a difficulty in bringing back some of these memories?
Parts of it were difficult, I won't lie. But for the most part, overall, it was cathartic. The worst part for me was after I wrote it, then those months while they're printing it, waiting for it to hit the stores, then I had every worst case scenario. You know, I couldn't sleep. I was so worried about the reaction. And I have to say that's, you know, it's been yet another example in, you know, for me to a life lesson. All those things that I spent all that energy worrying about happening didn't happen. And I think that that's a lesson just in life. Like, you know, just enjoy what's happening right now and stop worrying so much, because you don't know. I wasted a lot of energy worrying, in other words, about things happening that never happened. And I should have been using that time just to enjoy my life.
And that is a part of your challenge, isn't it?
It's a part of everybody's challenge. It's not just my challenge. Yeah. It's not just an addict's or an anxious person's challenge. We should all, you know, take a page from not worrying about tomorrow, not regretting the past, and just enjoying the present.
Well, you've given us a wonderful present, if you will,
thanks.
In this book, and sharing so much of yourself. And really, I think that you are going to help so many people. And this may be the greatest gift of your career in giving us this book. It's called Between Breaths, A Memoir of Panic and Addiction. It's the wonderful Elizabeth Vargas. Good luck to you, and God bless you. I really
thank you so much.
I think that this is a wonderful opportunity for people to hear your story and to perhaps, if not help themselves, help others.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Talking to Elizabeth Vargas. We'll see you on 2020.